Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end-of-season sale is here, and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals, and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 333. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, this was the last weekend in August. How's it feeling?
Oh, man. It's going too fast. But it's it, man. The season is winding down. We've got just a couple weeks left. We were talking about minor league playoffs before the show. And so it looks like that Portland may make the playoffs. And yeah. Greenville's only one and a half out. They've gone, despite sending most of the good players to Portland, Greenville's won 8 of the last 10 and it's only a game and a half back. And they play Bowling Green, who's in first this coming week. So it'll be a deciding series for them. Maybe they'll make it. That'd be good to extend the season a little bit. But yeah, so just talking to the wife earlier, we've only got a couple more games to go to this year, sadly, before the regular season is done.
Yeah, it's always a sad time of year. But looking forward to some playoff baseball, some postseason baseball here in Portland. Though it's great that we have the big three and Christian Campbell to help us out. Oh, wait, no, we don't. They're up in Worcester now. So don't really get a lot of hitting firepower anymore. But we got Sandlin now. We got Passford now. We still got some players here. But it would be nice to see the big three in a postseason setting. But obviously, they deserve the call, all three of them, and Campbell. It's really a big four now if we really look at it. But all right. No Red Sox prospect talk today, though. We got three up, three down, so six interesting pitching prospects that are either pitching well or not so well lately. Then we got some major league pitchers. Last episode, we went hitter heavy with major league guys, so we're going over to the pitching side. So this is an entire pitching-focused episode. Six major leaguers, six minor leaguers, a lot of intriguing names here. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us, including all of our Dynasty prospect and FYPD rankings. And of course, check out all the great things going on over at Rotoballer. Use that code Toolshed at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package. and every sport is covered over at RotoBaller. What a great content. So go check that out over at rotoballer.com. All right, we're going to start out with a pair of Spencers here, Chris. If Jackson is like the fun name over on the hitting side, maybe Spencer is the good first name on the pitching side. Obviously, Spencer Strider. Now you got Spencer Schwellenbach, Spencer Arrighetti. Those last two are the ones we'll be talking about here. So let's start with Spencer Schwellenbach. If you look at over the last 30 days, he is number one in K-minus walk rate at 33.1%. Also has a 284 ERA, 0.82 whip, and a 183 batting average against over the last 30 days. And his dominance kind of extended a little bit past that 30-day mark. But on the year, too, 23.7% K-minus walk rate, 28.2% strikeout, 4.5% walk rate, ERA 3.94, xERA 3.04. Chris, obviously, you lost Spencer Strider for the entire season, but a different Spencer has really stepped up and pitched really well for your Atlanta Braves here. And look at a lot of the metrics under the hood are in terms of quality of contact allowed. I already mentioned the walk and strikeout rates, deep six-pitch arsenal. How are you valuing a guy like Spencer Schwellenbach moving forward?
Yeah, he's one that you don't want to go insanely high on, but he's been good. I think it's hard to argue the results at this point. And you in a major league sample, we're looking at some really good stuff. And I think the crazy thing, and the thing that no one really could have predicted, is a player like this that was a shortstop in college and he pitched on occasion, like in relief, who the Braves draft with the full intention of developing as a pitcher. And then he has TJ. So he literally misses like the majority of time. He came back last year and has looked really good since. The results have been good. You look at him like, okay, like obviously 23-year-old, he was really good in single A. He should have been really good in single A. And then he jumped to high A and the strikeouts were there. And then this year starts the year back in high A. And it wasn't long before he was in the majors. It was the AJ Smith-Shawver like progression from last year, except Schwellenbach was a little bit older. Smith-Shawver was just 20 last year. But yeah, you look at it and the command's been spectacular. I think that's been the sticking point his entire career is he's commanded the ball. He's thrown a lot of strikes, which has led to a really low walk rate. And that's continuing to the majors, just a 4.5% walk rate. One of the better marks in the game. But the stuff has, I think, gradually improved too. And we're seeing he's getting chased out of the zone. He's getting plenty of end zone whiff. And the strikeouts are there. It's a strikeout rate north of 28% so far this year. He checks a lot of boxes of what you like to see. And sure, it's not like a overly dominant fastball, but it has the velo and he locates it well enough to make it work, which I think is pretty encouraging. His shape is like nothing to write home about, but it sets everything up and the velo kind of props it up a bit. And actually, like the StatCast data suggests that the fastball's underperformed a bit, so that better days could be ahead for it. But he's throwing a slider, throws a cutter, he's throwing a curve, he's throwing a split finger, mostly just to lefties. But honestly, like we're looking at a pretty true four-pitch mix with five pitches to lefties, and then the slider's predominantly used against righties, but he does mix it. He's mixed both, actually, pretty well against both-handed batters, which that's encouraging when you've got a deep arsenal like that. And you've got the ability to miss bats. And I think the slider's been really good. That's his second most used pitch. And then when you're using, I think the biggest benefit is that he's just not having to rely on the fastball heavily. Just 26% usage can do damage with a lot of different pitches. He's sequencing well. It's really a lot of things that you want to see out of a pitcher. And yeah, I think that I'm buying. Where does he land as far as rankings heading next year? I think that's a great question. And obviously, if he finishes the year strong, there's going to be a lot of hype here. And it may go a little too far. That's not to say Schwellenbach's not good. I think he's a really good arm. But I think if you get him next year as a round pick 125, I think that's where you probably look to take that shot. But yeah, I think that he is legit and it's sustainable long term. I'm just rather blown away by the progression, and how he's developed. And I keep hearing people say the Braves can't develop pitching, but look what they did with Renato Lopez this year. Look what they've done with Spencer Schwellenbach. I think we can keep going down the list and talking about a lot of guys they developed, and this is a huge developmental win with Spencer Schwellenbach.
Oh, it absolutely is. And you know, Owen Murphy, until he got hurt, was shooting up rankings. And last year it was Waldrop and AJ Smith-Shawver. So, yeah, there's a lot of intriguing arms in this Atlanta system. Is unfortunately, most of them getting hurt. But Schwellenbach, yeah, like you kind of alluded to what I was going to mention here, is that he uses all six of those pitches to both sides. The splitter, he's only thrown 15 times to righties. So there are some that are more favored to one side or the other. But the fact that he had all six of his pitches, he's thrown at least 50 times to lefties. It's between 51 and 155 to lefties. And then righties, the splitter is only one he really doesn't use a ton. He's used on the sinker and curveball 49 and 66 times, and the cutter, slider, four-seamer, the three he uses the most. But that's something that people know me, that I've loved that for a long time. That's what had me really high on Zach Gallen early in his career. He was the first one that I really started, I think, talking about this type of approach with, because he was so good at doing it and still does it to this day, even though he's having a little bit of a down year this year. But, you know, Schwellenbach checks off a lot of the boxes. Is he going to be an ace? No. He's still only 24 years old. He was a second-round pick back in 2021. So he's got some solid pedigree there. Command, as Chris mentioned, has been phenomenal. Four-seamer up, slider down, cutter. These are all pitches he commands pretty well. And the fact that he has two pitches, the curve and splitter, that he throws 13-15% of the time, both have a whiff rate above 40%. Sliders have a whiff rate above 30%. And you know, really the only pitch that is a negative pitch for him now, so to speak, is the cutter, which has a 306 batting average against and 571 slug against. But outside of that, all of the five pitches have been doing well. Solid ground ball right around league average. So no issues there. And yeah, contact rates are a little bit better than league average. Yeah, I think there's a lot of good metrics here. So I think I don't see any reason why he couldn't be a top 50 starter moving forward, and maybe a bit higher. There's a lot of good in this profile. So I'm definitely looking to buy right now. Next one here, we got Spencer Arrighetti. So we go from one Spencer to another, who is third in strikeout minus walk rate over the last 30 days. And sandwiched right in between them is Blake Snell, 30.7%. Arrighetti's at 30.5%. And Schwellenbach, 33.1%. But over the last 30 days, 6.8% walk rate for Arrighetti, 37.3% strikeout rate, 2.93 ERA, 0.95 whip, in a 191 batting average against here. And he was pretty bad to start the season. So even when he's been really good lately, the ERA is still right around 5 at 4.94 with a 1.41 whip. He's been doing much better of late. So, Chris, that's a bit of a different profile here, but are you buying into this Spencer and Spencer Arrighetti?
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in what he's doing. And it took a little bit of an approach change to, really see him kind of progress. And I like that a pitcher like this is noticing things and making tweaks and adjustments. And it's been a big progression for him. And yeah, you look on the surface and it's okay, he's got a 4.94 ERA and a 1.41 whip. What's good about that? But if you look at the rolling, like, it's been really encouraging to see how it's trended down all year, which I really love to see. The FIP, the XFIP, all those numbers look really good. Arrighetti's missing bats. He checks a lot of boxes too, in my opinion. But you look, and Lance Brozdowski brought this up, where he basically changed his approach with his four-seam early in counts. He was throwing it more to the middle, and now he's moved it, throwing it down and away, which I think is pretty encouraging. Obviously, like, you're doing something like that, it's trying to get it strikes early in the count. Like, you don't want to leave something over the heart and get hit in a 0-0 count. But our guy, he's got a low release point. He's got a decent vertical break on it. And then also you think of how the fastball works off the other pitches, and think that this location, the better location of this pitch, really helps it in all his other pitches play up. So he's getting more whiffs when he's throwing it down and away, which I think is encouraging, but he can elevate when he needs to and get the whiffs at the top of the zone. But that cutter, the cutter is really the big thing. He's locating up. He's burying the sweeper down. The curveball has been a solid pitch. So Schwellenbach, it's a pretty deepish arsenal, not quite as deep as Schwellenbach. Arrigetti's throwing the fastball more. It's 40%+ fastball usage, but it's interesting because this has honestly not been a great pitch. But I do think when he made that adjustment, it has helped out a little bit. But you look at the run values on the cutter, the curve, and the sweeper, they've all been really good. Those are all very positive pitches. Arrigetti's heavy extension. So the velo is going to play up a little more on these pitches. His changeup actually has got obliterated this year, which is weird. It's a 469 batting average against with a 320 expected. So he's throwing pretty much exclusively to lefties, but it's been getting hit around a little bit. The run value on it is terrible, but still, you look and man, he's been impressive. Do I think that he's like an ace? No, but I think that Arrigetti's like a solid, like mid-rotation starter moving forward, because you go back and if we look like since July 7th, the numbers have been pretty spectacular over that span. It's 47 2/3. It's a 3.21 ERA, 60 strikeouts to just 14 walks. So he's had a lot of success. I'm buying in Arrigetti as well. It may be a little late to get in because the caustic bottomed out after his slower start. Like he had some rough starts mixed in there, especially his first one. And I think that the buying opportunity was there. It may be more gone now, but still, I think you can still get in and get Arrigetti a decent price, especially if people just look at the surface numbers.
Yeah, which a lot of people definitely do. So maybe you can try to sneak that in and use it to your advantage. But yeah, Arrigetti, I'm not as in on Arrigetti as I was, or as I am, excuse me, on Schwellenbach. But I am in to a degree here on Arrigetti. He's been pitching, as we both said, pretty well for a while now. And has a lot of good things in this profile. It's another deep arsenal, five pitches, four seam cutter, curve, sweeper, changeup. Also has two pitches with a whiff rate above 40%, and also has a third, the changeup at 36.5. So three over 35 is really encouraging. In both curveball and sweeper, which are the two that are above 40%, also have a batting average against under 150 and a slug allowed under 270. So those have been absolute money pitches for him. Sure, he gives up a little too much. Fly balls and line drives. Ground ball rate's around 10% worse than league average, if you want to find something to kind of quibble with. But there's a lot of good the rest of the profile. Contact rates, whiff rates, all pretty solid here. And yeah, I don't think he's going to be a stud either. And I'd rank him below Schwellenbach. But can Arrigetti be, if Schwellenbach's like a top 40-ish, 40 to 50-ish pitcher, Arrigetti's probably like top 60 to 70 pitcher, somewhere in that range. A good SP5 or so for your fantasy team. And then I agree with you, Chris, about that for real life and mid-rotation starter for Houston. And then just another one that Houston, they do so well with these types of guys. Maybe the guys that were fourth, fifth, sixth round picks or later, ones that never had huge prospect pedigree, and they turn them into good major league pieces. Like, look at the current guys. Like, Framber Valdez was never a highly – he was a decently ranked prospect, but not, like, a stud prospect. Renell Blanco, same thing. Arrigetti was a sixth-rounder, 2021. Hunter Brown was a fifth-rounder. Like, they just do so well with these guys. And the list goes on and on. Even some of the guys that are hurt right now for them, guys like Luis Garcia and Christian Javier and Jose Urquidy, were all not the stud, the top 100 caliber prospects for the most part. And they just keep doing so well at finding these guys and developing them. And Arrigetti is just another example of that. So, yeah, again, not quite the same level, but I am in on Arrigetti as well. Next one here, we got Bowden Francis, who, if we go back to the K-minus walk rate leaderboard over the last 30, he is seventh at 26.3%. Right between a couple guys named Chris Sale and Zach Wheeler. Also over the last 30, he has a 191 ERA, a 0.61 whip, and a 134 batting average against. He's been pitching incredibly well here. He's been in and out of the rotation and the bullpen this year. He's at 8 starts and 14 relief appearances here. But this is one where I'm not nearly as high on Francis as I am on the two Spencers. He's got a four pitch, well, technically five, but only throws the sinker 1.5% of the time. I don't really count it until it gets about 5%. So really just like a 4% four pitch mix here. Fastball, curve, slider, splitter. Slider is the only real one that misses bats at a solid clip. And it's weird because he has a 40.5% whiff rate on the slider. And this is only thrown 8% of the time. So this is his fourth most used pitch. But it's got a 353 batting average against an 824 slug, but also has a 40.5% whiff rate. But the expected metrics on that pitch are much better. So I will give him that. You look at, he gives up decent amount of contact, though. That's the reason why I'm not as in on Francis. He doesn't miss a ton of bats. Whiff rate is only 20.9%, 4% below or worse, I should say, than league average. Doesn't get a lot of chase. Zone contact, he allows more than league average. I'm not saying he can't be like a viable back end starter or something like that, but I definitely would rather be out there targeting Arrighetti or Schwellenbach via trade or whatever this offseason than Francis. But I don't know, Chris, what are your thoughts on Bowden Francis?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I prefer, obviously, either Schwellenbach or Arrighetti, but Francis did come back as a different pitcher. The sinker usage is, he just added it like a couple starts ago. And so the first time he threw it was August the 12th. And you look at the pitch mix, it's interesting to see, like, game over game, there's definitely some inconsistencies, but what kind of has been consistent in his rise and his good starts has been he's using the splitter a lot more. So the splitter usage is up. That's obviously been a big catalyst for him. You look at the four-seam usage, it's down a little bit, throwing some more sinkers, which I think that the shape is decent enough where it's okay. This is beneficial. And he's almost, I'm going to say he scrapped the curveball, but he's throwing the curveball much less. So you look at Francis and it's a big extension profile. The fastball is fine, but I really think the splitter is a really good offering here. So I think that like the curbing of the curveball has actually been a pretty good thing for him because in the past that pitch has actually got hit rather hard. Like in the month of July, it was like a 444 batting average against. You go back to June, it was a 500 batting average against. In April, it was a 217 batting average against. But you look at the results and they're not great. So the curve obviously has not done him much justice. And so to not use it, I think is a pretty good step for him. Splitter's been missing bats. Slider's good and it's missing bats. So I think it's almost about finding the right pitch mix for Francis. He's come back and honestly, yeah, it's looked a lot better. Is it long-term sustainable? I don't know. I think he could be a solid back-end starter. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's going to continue to do what he's done because he's been pretty spectacular over these last few starts. And it's just like continue. I didn't expect the streak to continue how it has, but yet you look at the starts and it's a great start against the Yankees. It's a great start against the Orioles. You got the Angels in there, but twice, but again, whatever, the Cubs. So three of his five starts in August have been Yankees, Baltimore, Cubs. So pretty solid lineups. And to see Francis perform has been pretty encouraging. So yeah, I'm watching this pretty closely, but there has been some tangible change with the pitch mix where it's okay. Maybe there is something here. Am I ready to fully dive in head first on him? No, but I do think that he's at this point probably an add. See where it goes. And if the success continues in 2025, then great. Like you stashed him, he got some use out of him in 2024, and you take that shot that he's going to get in 2025 because I do think it's interesting enough where he's 28, he's not old, he's still got the prime of his career ahead of him. So, sure, I think that there could be something here with Bowden Francis.
Yeah, at least you can get like maybe a back end arm out of him because even look at last year, he had pretty similar strikeout to walk rate last year. He had a 5.9% walk rate, 25.7% K rate this year at 6.5 and 24.1. I've never been a guy that walks too many batters. At least he maybe gives you some stable innings and a back end role for sure. See, next one here Osvaldo Beto of the Oakland Athletics, who has been absolute money here over the, you know, the last several starts here. If you look at what he's done here in August, look at this game log. So in August, 4 starts, 1.17 ERA, and that's over 23 innings, only allowed 3 earned runs and 11 hits, 9 walks, and 23 strikeouts. So 4 really good outings here from Beto in August, and some, it's a pretty mixed bag. You look at the profile overall, the walk rate on the year is a bit high, 11.6%, but where he really excels is just not giving up hard contact. He has allowed only 3 barrels the entire year. He's pitched 50 innings. Now he's up there with the league leaders at 140, 150. But in 50 innings, he's only giving up 3 barrels, 2.4% barrel rate. Average EV allowed, 84.8 miles an hour, and a 25.5% hard hit rate. XBA and X-Slug are also among the, he's in the 99th percentile for both of those as well. So that's where he really excelled. He's been going more four-seam heavy of late, up to a 46% usage on the four-seamer this month. He's also been throwing the changeup more this month, which has been really good for him. That has a 111 batting average against, 111 slug, so no extra base hits, and a 38.9% whiff rate. That's at about right under a 20% usage rate. Last month, it was only 7.8%. It was actually his least used pitch last month, and now it's second behind the four-seamer. So, hey, maybe Oakland has found something here with Beto, former Pittsburgh Pirate arm. So there's definitely some intrigue here. But I guess, Chris, how intrigued are you with Osvaldo Beto?
Just riding the wave here and seeing where it takes me, because I do think there's some intriguing aspects of his game. He's also not a ground ball pitcher at all. It's a lot of fly balls, which kind of concerns me moving forward. Like, you can get away with some fly balls at the Coliseum, but they're going to Sacramento next year.
Yep.
And I don't think it's going to play too well. So I'm monitoring that. And it's interesting that the sinker usage has actually trended downward all year. And you mentioned in favor of that four seam that he's using much more, but it's almost as if you want to rely on the sinker at least a little bit to get some ground balls in his case. He hasn't really done that, but I'm just a hair worried, like, about the fly ball profile. But it's hard to argue against because he's gotten a lot of weak contact. He's got a lot of pop-ups. He's one of the least barreled pitchers in the league. You look at the hard hit rates, it's one of the lowest hard hit rates for any pitcher. So I think there is some legitimacy here to Osvaldo Beto. He's not striking out a ton. He does walk a few too many batters. I don't think he's going to be like really good arm. I don't think it's like one of these guys you can't miss out on. But I do think Beto's pretty interesting, and at least ride it out this year and see where it goes. Because, yeah, he's been as hot as any pitcher over the last month or so. And if that success can continue, then you're really liking what you have. And again, he's faced the Dodgers, Blue Jays, Giants, and Rays this month. And a 1.17 ERA, I think that's the lowest in August. 23 strikeouts in 23 innings. That's fine. Like, we'll take that. But he has walked 9 batters. So that's something to keep an eye on, the walk rate. But yeah, it's honestly, like, we're looking at interest level of how we've talked about these four guys so far. It would be the order we've talked about them, like Schwellenbach, Arrighetti, Francis, Beto would be where I am on those four.
Yeah, I definitely go with the two Spencers first, with the Schwellenbach, then Arrighetti. I'm pretty indifferent between Francis and Beto. They both have intrigue in different ways. But with Beto, I think the real question is, like, what happens first? Does, you know, some of the batted ball luck that he's had this year bite him? Like, you mentioned the higher fly ball rate or the lower ground ball rate. He's only given up 2 home runs. So does that home run to fly ball rate stabilize before he can improve, maybe improve the walk rate and get the ground ball rate to go up a little bit? So it's almost like, what happens first with him? What bites him first? Or can he make the improvements needed and get that walk rate down a little bit? But you definitely get some intrigue. I want to see how his next or his last 4 or 5 starts of the season go. So definitely a little bit of intrigue here. Next name here, This is a guy that was the epitome of mediocre last year. Ryan Nelson had a 5.31 ERA, 1.42 WHIP, and only a 15.5% strikeout rate last year across 144 innings. So he was pitching. He made almost every start. He had 27 starts last year, but yeah, just mediocre across the board, really. And it kind of started out that way. So I was, if you looked at maybe 2-3 months ago, had zero, less than zero interest in Ryan Nelson. But hey, he's been pitching a lot better of late. And go back to the K-minus walk rate leaderboard. For a guy that had a 15.5% K rate last year, a 31.7% K rate over the last 30 days. Yeah, for the season, it's still only 19.7%. But lately, he has definitely been missing bats and still maintaining that pretty low walk rate that we've come to know from him. And also over the last 30 days, in addition to that 31.7% K rate, 5% walk rate. So that puts him fifth on the K-minus walk rate leaderboard. Also has a 2.56 ERA, FIP, XFIP, Sierra, right in the mid to upper two range. Also a 0.85 WHIP and a 1.86 batting average against. And he's the one that kind of forced Arizona to move Jordan Montgomery out to the bullpen. They had a decision to make between Nelson and Jomo, and I think that was a pretty easy decision with how each of those two arms has been pitching lately. And you look at the breakdown here, he's been going very four-seam heavy. He always has. He was running 50% each of the first 3 months. He's up over 60% each of the last 2 months, while mixing in the occasional cutter change, curveball, and slider. But it's definitely been working for him lately. But how much are you buying into Ryan Nelson here, Chris? Again, you know, pretty about a season and a half of mediocrity, and then the last, what, 5-6 weeks of him pitching really well. So what do you believe in here?
I wanted to buy in spring training because the velo was up so much. Didn't obviously look good out of the gate. He was actually pretty bad, you know, off the jump, and then really bad in May and June. But it's interesting that the success has coincided with more fastball usage, which we don't typically see. But right, in the process, you look at the fastball velo month over month, it was 94.6 in June, 95.2 in July, and 95.5 in the month of August. So that's at least an encouraging sign that you, in the process, he has added some velo, which we don't typically see later in the season. He's also locating it much better, which is huge. So I think that's important that not only is he added velo, but he's locating it much better up in the zone. That's a big thing for him. I think that the cutter has been a really solid pitch too. It's helped him out. When the fastball is working, the cutter plays off of it. Yeah, it's 70% usage on fastball cutter, which is bizarre for a starter. Like, we don't often see that work, but it has. His changeup's actually gotten hit around a little bit. The curveball's been good. I think the curveball's been one of the better pitches here. And he almost completely ditched it in July, but he's come back with it some in the month of August. 7% usage this month, and it's been a solid offering. So do I think it come crashing down pretty quick? Yeah, because I don't love seeing any pitcher that's 70% or even, I will say, even 60% fastball, but we're looking at 60% four-seam, and then you add in the cutter too, and it's just heavier usage than I'd like to see. But right now it's working, and it's actually pretty intriguing. Nelson's been really good as of late, and it's hard to argue. Even since the start of July, it's a 2.76 ERA. It's backed by a 2.69 FIP, so that's been an encouraging sign too. It's plenty of strikeouts. It's 62 innings and just 12 walks. So yeah, Nelson's been really good, and while I've got questions, he keeps proving me wrong.
Yeah, so I'm trying to find where he ranks on the leaderboard for fastball usage rate, but I can't break it down by month. But he'd be up there. He's looking at for full season, and most of these guys are relievers. So I'm trying to find like the first starter that's even up near 60%. I guess Justin Steele is the first name, looks like glossed over a name, that I'm finding here, and he's right at 60%. With his four-seamer over the entire season. That 60% mark is among the league leaders, at least for starters. But hey, it's working for him. Usually we don't see that. Usually it's the opposite way, throw less of them. but he's locating it well, and he works that cutter and changeup primarily. Those are his two most used secondaries off of that. I'm not he's in that the Beto and Francis range for me. I think if we rank the five so far, he'd be probably third, but still a good a bit behind both the Spencers. So yeah, I'm not like fully buying in, but I do think somewhere the other two that there can be some back end top 100 SP value here. We got one more arm here before we get up to over to three up, three down, and that's Davis Martin with the Chicago White Sox. Came up and debuted for them back in 2022 and then missed all of 2023 with Tommy John surgery. But he's come back, made four starts and one relief appearance, totaling 22 and a third innings. And he's been pretty good in those 22 and a third innings. 3.22 ERA, right around league average K rate. Walk rate is a little high, but pitching very well over his last few starts. Are you taking anything from this, Chris? He was never a big prospect in debut until he was, I think, 25, 26. So a little bit of a late bloomer here, but probably pretty good opportunity to start for the White Sox moving forward because they don't really have many other arms that can take that spot. So are you intrigued at all by Davis Martin?
I think the intriguing thing is he just added a changeup out of the blue in August, and it's worked. It's been defined as a kick changeup based on the movement profile. It sits around 87. It gets a lot of arm side movement. Like, I think it's confirmed. It's averaging like 15 inches of arm side movement with pretty good carry on it. Like, it's not a ton of drop, but it's like kind of Hayden Birdsong-esque. Like, that's what the changeup compares to there. It's interesting because it plays well off the fastball. And to have the kind of separation that he does is pretty huge. And it, like, you look in, you know, the velo gap, I think, is what's notable because it's not a big one at all. We're looking at, you know, an average of 93.7, getting a little dyslexic there, in August on the fastball. And then the changeup averaging like 88.6. So not a lot of separation velo-wise, but the fact that it can play well because of the movement profile is pretty substantial. It's graded out well stuff plus-wise. The rest of the stuff is just, eh. I don't think that this one pitch is just going to make him a stud. It is pretty interesting that he was able to develop it. I think that's wild in itself because it was actually reported on Twitter by the Art of Baseball that apparently he only used about 10 reps in the bullpen of throwing this, and then he debuted it in a game. It was like the first time he actually utilized it ever was that it was just, hey, I'm going to try it in a bullpen, threw 10 pitches, and they decided to go and use it 20% of the time in the game. So that's wild to see, and obviously it's been a very helpful pitch for him. I do think the command's still a question mark. You know, you look at that, you mentioned the walk rate. I think that's a little bit concerning in itself, but I do think that, sure, there's some interesting things with Davis Martin here. Maybe just add him without a lot of expectations, see where it goes, and hope that it works. Like, I'm not super confident, but, you know, I'm not going to just sit here and deny that he's going to be good. So I think that the changeup, if he hadn't had the changeup, probably wouldn't be interested, but the fact he has is been encouraging.
Yeah, it definitely is encouraging. I'm still not really that intrigued overall, though. And it's weird. And we mentioned the walk. That was never really an issue for him in the minor leagues. He was just getting hit around too much in the minor leagues. He had higher ERAs and whips, but the walk rate was actually pretty solid in the minor leagues. So I'm not sure if that'll be a major concern moving forward. We'll see. But he's definitely sixth. It's almost like three tiers within these six. The two Spencers in tier one. Tier two is Nelson, Beto, and Francis. And then Davis Martin in tier three. But I was just looking at the White Sox rotation here, Chris. Who would you say is their number two right now? They got Garrett Crochet. And then the rest of the five right now is Flexen, Bush, Cannon, and Martin. I'm like, who?
They don't have one.
Who is there?
It doesn't exist. Maybe it exists somewhere in the minor leagues just by default. I'm not saying they have an SP2 in them. They do. They have Noah Schultz, but
right.
He's not close. And they have Hagen Smith too, who also debuted. But yeah, I don't think either of those guys are close. But yeah, right now you could bump in the AAA guys up. You could probably bump up the entire AAA rotation and pitch them with Crochet, and it would probably get better results.
Let's say there's so many like former like decent arms and other rotations that they now have. Like, look at their bullpen. Jared Schuster flamed out with your Atlanta Braves. You got Eniel De Los Santos, who was a thing for a little bit with the Phillies. Tuki Toussaint is in that bullpen now as well. Gus Varland. It's funny, some of these former decent pitching prospects for other organizations that they now just have in their bullpen. But yeah, it's with Martin. Yeah, definitely sixth out of six here for these guys in terms of my intrigue level. Let's head over to three up, three down with pitching prospects this week. And we're starting with the guy that is probably the hottest pitching prospect in all of baseball right now. I mean, this guy, every time he starts it lately, it's must-see TV. And we're talking about Quinn Matthews here with the St. Louis Cardinals, currently in Double A. And over the last 30 days, six starts, 36 innings. He's given up 20 hits, five runs, eight walks, and 54 strikeouts. So 1.25 ERA and a 0.78 WHIP. And he's got double-digit strikeout performances in his last four, I believe it was, or his last five. He is absolutely rolling right now and might be the number two lefty pitching prospect in baseball right now behind Noah Schultz. So he's definitely in that discussion. He's definitely a top 10 pitching prospect right now. I even have him ahead of Tink Hentz, St. Louis's best pitching prospect. Man, Chris, he has just been absolutely phenomenal this year. He was that group of the breakout pitching prospects earlier this season. But he was one where I'm like, all right, it's been great. But he was 20. He was still 22 then, or just turned 23, and he was in like low A. I'm like, all right, let me see him against like high A and double A. And he's been just as good or even better at these the upper levels here. Yeah, it's time to give Matthews his due. This is the top 10 pitching prospect. And one that I think he's going to keep flying up the ranks and might be top five pretty soon here.
Yeah, it's hard to have projected this happening. We're talking about somebody that jumped 3 miles an hour from Stanford to now. And he's now sitting 95, 96 regularly with a fastball, which is obviously huge. Like that aspect is very important. And it's really funky. I think that's really the thing. Yeah, the velo's there, but it's from a funky arm slot. Obviously from the left side. It's interesting. It's like not heavy extension by any means, but you look at the release height. It's like, okay, like I see why it plays pretty good IVB based on the release height, and he gets plenty of swings and misses on it. It's well above average whiff rate on that fastball. I think it's around like 26% this year. Hasn't got hit hard at all. The fastball has been good. You mix in a slider. You mix in a curve, you mix in a changeup. Yeah, I think that the fact that he throws all of those more than 10% of the time is also encouraging. So it is a four-pitch mix. The slider velocity is up. It's actually bumped up throughout the season, sitting like 86 now in the process. Like it's getting more carry. It's playing better off the fastball. It's got decent sweeping action, but it gets a lot of swings and misses. It's over a 40% whiff rate this year. The changeup, low 80s. The changeup whiff rate's like close to 50, or swing and miss is, yeah, what's whiff rate? 50%. It's wild to look at and see. And I think it's interesting. It's got a lot of separation velo wise off the fastball. It's a lower release on the changeup, but still, he makes it work. I do agree with you. I think he's better than Tink Hentz at this point. I'm more confident. Tink Hentz hasn't been able to throw the innings consistently. Quinn Matthews has been a dog. He looked last year, he threw 124 and two thirds at Stanford, which is huge. Like most college arms aren't breaking 100. He was at 99 and a third the season before that, and he was throwing out of the bullpen some. So he wasn't even a full starter in 2022. He's shown he can pitch on the Cape. This year, he's already at 126 and two thirds. Like, this is a workhorse starter. It's hard to argue against him at this point. I think you could go top five on him, even though the stuff's not the flashiest in the world. But I think top 10 pitching prospects, certainly a comfortable spot on Quinn Matthews at this point. And I wouldn't be shocked to see him make a major league start this year. I know he's in Double A. Wouldn't be shocked at all to see him in the majors, at least for one start.
Why not? He's already moved up two levels. He's pitching so incredibly well and very polished, advanced arm. Yeah, I could definitely see it. Or if not, he's going to be a staple in that rotation early next season and might be the best one in that rotation. Obviously, that's been a kind of a lackluster rotation for the most part with St. Louis. But he could probably step in either two or three right off the bat. He's that good. If you look at some of the minor league pitching stats this year, you get K rate, K minus walk rate, batting average against. The top two in both of those categories are Quinn Matthews and then Matt Tugboat Wilkinson from the Cleveland Guardians. And that's if you use, you know, 100 inning pitch threshold there. So yeah, he's been absolute money, like not just lately, the entire season. Probably we'd have to go back and look, but I don't know when we started this three up, three down thing, probably like May or June, something like that. He's probably been an up at least probably three times at this point every few weeks. Like, yeah, let's just throw Quinn Matthews in there again because he's still dominating, especially lately with that K minus walk rate, 54-8, is phenomenal stuff. So yeah, Quinn Matthews, absolutely top 10 pitching prospect. And next guy here, someone that I think many had as a top 10 or at least close to it pitching prospect to start the season, myself included, very high in this guy, but this has not been the greatest season for him. And that's Nomal Meyer with the Miami Marlins, still only 19 years old, won't be 20 until next January, 10th overall pick in last year's draft. You know, the issue with Meyer has been walks this year. He has 48 walks in 65 and two-thirds innings, and that equates out to, if I can do my math correctly here, 17.1% walk rate, and it's not gotten like any better over the last 30 days here, as he has 12 walks in his last 11 and a third innings. He's also given up 11 runs in those 11 and a third innings for an 874 ERA and a 203 whip. I mean, the stuff is borderline frontline caliber stuff that I don't like to throw on that term often, but when he's on, he looks like, you know, a guy that could be a frontline starter. And I'm not saying he can't be that, but I'm also starting to get some Mick Abel vibes from him where it's really good stuff and when he's on, but it's just so inconsistent. And I'm not ready to say he's like Abel 2.0 because Abel's a few years older and been around a lot longer. But Myers, like, he's starting to maybe like at least look down that. Yeah, he's at a fork in the road and he's at least looking down that Mick Abel path. I don't want him to walk that way. I want him to go the other way here. And again, still very young. He's 19 in high A. That's the fairly aggressive assignment for a 19-year-old. So I'm definitely not out, or I don't have one foot out the door or anything. I'm still very high on Nomal Meyer because the stuff is so good. But there definitely is that major red flag right now with that walk rate that needs to get corrected. So I bumped him down. He's not a top 10 pitching prospect for me anymore. I still have him, I think, inside my top 20, but definitely want to see that some this red flag start to get corrected here pretty soon. What are your thoughts right now on Nomal Meyer, Chris?
I think it would be okay to say he's not a top 100 prospect at this point.
Yeah.
The strike throwing's not there. It's been pretty bad, actually. He can't find the zone. He's not missing bats. He was able to miss bats in single A against Florida State League hitters, but he's not fooling these hitters missing the zone in high A. It's certainly big stuff, as you mentioned. It's really interesting movement profiles. The fastball has a lot of arm side run. It's 93 miles an hour. He's got a sweeper that gets good sweeping action on it. It's a lot of horizontal with all these pitches, with four seam sweeper, curve, change. It's big extension. It's a lower release height for a taller frame. I think it's 5'7" release height. So I think that, honestly, like, I buy the stuff. Like, yeah, that's no question. He destroyed single A hitters with the stuff. But as you face better competition, you got to be able to locate it, which I think is obviously major importance. And I look at the walk rates, I look at the strike rates right now. The fastball command and location is not good at all. The strike rates aren't great. And again, he's 19. So I do think these things improve, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you I think that he's like a top flight pitching prospect at the moment. And I think there's other guys that I'd much rather invest in at this point, knowing that it may be a longer process with Nomal Meyer. And you mentioned Mick Abel, and Abel's how old now? He's 23, I think. And
I think so, yeah.
We're still waiting on it for it to come together. And Abel really never posted walk rates like Meyer has at any point in his career until this year. So that's another concerning aspect that I have, is like, it would have to be a huge step forward in strike throwing and walk rate. So yeah, something to watch, but yeah, I'm comfortable saying that he may not be a top 100 prospect for me at this point.
Yeah, no, that's definitely fair to ask and or fair to assume. I think he's, I don't know if I have him top 100. If he's out, he's not out by much. If he's in, he's not in by much. I think he is slightly out at this point, but he could be the guy that pushes back top 50, not this year. I think this is too late in the season. You only get a couple more starts before the season ends, but you know, 2025, I think, will be a really big year for him. As a 20-year-old, I'm assuming he starts back in high A. There's no reason for them to push him to double A. Can he make those improvements this offseason, next spring, getting into the season? Do we start seeing the strike throwing improve, the walk rate go down, you know, or is he going to keep going down this path? I hate to say it's not a make-or-break year, but it's going to be a very telling year in 2025 to see if these improvements can be made with him. Because, yeah, the upside is just so incredibly high that I really hope it does, because it's a very, when he's on, you know, aren't many pitchers with more upside than Noble Meyer. Next arm here, our second up, we're going to a guy that's 5.5 years older than Noble Meyer, with 25-year-old Noah Cameron in the Kansas City Royals organization, who fell down a lot of people's rankings last year. Pretty mediocre 2023. And even double A this year, he was okay. Since moving to triple A in late July, his first start there on July 31st, he has 5 straight quality starts at the level, 31 in the third innings, 172 ERA, and a 36-8 strikeout to walk ratio. And he's pitched at least 6 innings in 6 of his last 7 starts, and has at least 6 strikeouts in 8 straight starts now, dating back to his last few starts with double A Northwest Arkansas, which I'm sure is a very happening place there. But Chris, I know you've been pretty vocal and writing about and tweeting about Noah Cameron over, you know, the last month or two here. How much intrigue is there with Cameron for you, and what type of pitcher long-term do you think he's going to be?
He's interesting because I saw him in Columbia. He was pretty good. And then he really fell off as he moved up levels. Like, it was one of those things where you watched and it's okay. Yeah, he's striking guys out. The command is good. But at the time, like in 2022, the stuff really wasn't like overpowering per se. And then as he's moved up, it's like, yeah, okay. Like continuing to perform. And last year, like the traction started coming early in the year with him in high A, and he bumped to double A and was just terrible, like very bad all year in double A in 2023. Fast forward to this year, and it's been really good. And the stint in double A was good, but the stint in triple A has been incredible to see how he's really progressed. And it's not flashy stuff. Like, fastball sits 92 to 93. It's pretty generic shape, like from 6'4 release height. So it's like really odd. Like, the fastball's worked, but it's really the secondaries that kind of make everything else play. I almost wonder if he should use the four seam a little less, just given the shape is pretty bland and it doesn't really miss bats. But it's the changeup that's really good. Changeup gets really good carry, actually plays really well off the fastball. It has, you know, 10, 12 inches of horizontal movement of fade. It's like 79-80. It's got a really high whiff rate on it at this point. AAA, that's at 52%. Which is crazy. He'll dump in a curveball on you, which is 12-6 shape. That's probably, I would say, his best offering. It's, you know, negative 9 inches of IVB, so really good IVB separation. It's like an inch of movement horizontally, so not a lot there, but it actually sits in a similar velo band as the changeup, which I don't necessarily love when you see two pitches sit in that same band. But I will say he is throwing a cutter, slider a little bit, which is good. It's sitting in the upper 80s, touching 90. So that kind of gives him that extra pitch that he needs. The interesting thing is, like, look at the release pattern on all these pitches. It's highly inconsistent from like pitch to pitch. So part of me is like, does it work? Like, it's low extension. Is it just dominance against, like, you know, not so great competition? And I do have some questions still, especially about the fastball and how it really plays. But I do think the curve's good. I like the change up a bit with Cameron too. And the fact that he has taken those steps has been really encouraging to me.
Yeah, and he's someone we could see here, you know, maybe get some starts down the stretch here with Kansas City, yeah. Or even a guy that could, you know, maybe slot into their rotation next year. Maybe they don't have an opportunity for him this year because that rotation's actually been, you know, low-key pretty solid this year. They added some pieces. Lorenzen's kind of been pitching all right for them. Obviously, Cole Reagan, Seth Lugo have been pretty good. Walker and Singer have been steady. So maybe they, you know, don't give Cameron a shot this year. But, you know, maybe next year that he slides into that rotation. And, yeah, I don't think he's going to be a stud by any means or even like a top 50 guy for fantasy, but definitely some intrigue here. And that he's reverting back and getting back to his dominant ways of where he was in the lower minors is pretty encouraging as he gets closer and closer to his major league debut. So, yeah, definitely a little bit of intrigue here. I think he could be a solid, like, number four starter in the major leagues. I would even say number three starter, but I think solid number four is definitely fair for Noah Cameron. Next pitcher here, our second down, is Xander Muth with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Someone that was pitching pretty well at the complex level, but since he got bumped up to low A, Bradenton not pitched so well. They're limiting his innings. He was going five innings a lot. Actually, in six of his last seven starts at the complex, he went five innings, but only going two or three innings so far in Bradenton, but has not been pitching well there. He's given up, seven earned runs and has a lot of walks here. He has 16 walks in just 10 and two-thirds innings at Bradenton so far. Chris, are you at all concerned by this? He just turned 19 back in late June, so only a couple months ago, and you know, him at a new level after pitching well at the complex, and he was starting to get a decent amount of buzz around him in dynasty leagues. So are you at all concerned by this, or is it just him adjusting to a new level here over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I'm a little bit concerned. I think the command's just really erratic and even has been and was at the complex. I missed a start when I was down there, but I did see him throw in the pen. And he's intriguing. He's a physical force. He's 6'6", 200. So you look at it, it's like, yeah, there's certainly some intrigue here with the body, the projectability. But the strike throwing is really my biggest thing. He's had flashes where he goes through stretches and it's good, but the walk rate overall has been a massive concern, and his inability to throw strikes is also a little bit concerning. Yeah, he should overpower complex level guys. Like, this is the type of arm where you absolutely should dominate there. It's good stuff. It's a sinker, which is interesting. It's a lot of arm side movement, 15 inches regularly on that sinker. It's heavy extension, 7 feet of extension, sitting 94, so it does play up a little bit, but he's heavy fastball. It's a very heavy fastball profile, which is also something to watch. 60%+ fastball. Slider's good. It's kind of a gyro shape, not a lot of movement, glove side, and not a lot of vertical movement either, but does get whiffs. Sits mid-80s, and the changeup sits in a similar velocity band to it, and it actually plays well off the slider, I think. It's a similar vertical movement profile, then it's running 13, 15 inches the other way. So I think there's some intrigue with the arsenal with Xander, but I do think that we need to see him throw more strikes. I think that'll be the biggest thing, and that's honestly my biggest concern with him long-term.
Yeah, and you can say that about a lot of these guys. His stuff isn't quite as good as Nomal Meyer's. Similar kind of big stuff, loud stuff, but can he throw enough strikes to fully maximize that? And he was second-round pick last year, and we've seen Pittsburgh's pitching development has been very good over the last really 3-4 years, maybe even a little bit longer than that. So I feel good about where he's at in the system-wise, and if they can help him hone in that command a little bit, he could be the next one that we're talking about in a couple of years when Jared Jones emerged, earlier this year. I was saying Bubba Chandler, Braxton Ashcraft. We can see the next arm that really emerges for this Pittsburgh org being Xander Muth. So Definitely one I think I'd still be looking to buy right now, because I think the price tag is still, you know, pretty suppressed. I think you can maybe even pick him up depending on the depth of your league. I think there's definitely to be a low risk investment. Doesn't work out, you either picked him up for free or traded very little to get him, and potentially could be a massive ROI if he's able to hone in that command and really take off. It could be a guy you're looking at as a top 50 overall prospect, top 10 pitching prospect. That's like the upside we have here. So definitely we'll be looking to invest right now. Maybe your trade deadline's already passed, probably has, but maybe this offseason go out and try to get Xander Muth. Next one here, we got Rhett Lauder with the Cincinnati Reds. So let's take it right here in the National League Central. Lauder started off the year pretty good, then had a really rough stretch in the middle of the season, fell out of some top 100s I was seeing, but he's been pitching very well, you know, over the last, let's see, it was his 6 starts now, including his debut at AAA a few days ago where he had 6 shutout innings. He's only allowed 2 earned runs total in his last 6 starts, spanning 35 innings. So he's really heating up again, you know, after having a 6 earned run outing in June, a couple of 4s in there, a 5 and a 7 back in May. The fact that he's only allowed 18 hits, 2 runs, and 7 walks in his last 35 innings, 154 batting average against, 0.51 ERA over that stretch. I wouldn't rule it out to see Lauder this year. Yeah, probably not, but this is a guy that's very close, obviously AAA now, very advanced arm in general, collegiate arm last year's draft that we thought would move quickly and really has. So I think this is him getting back to the arm that we thought he could be, and him showing that kind of little inconsistent rough patch in May and June and a little bit early part of July, we're not who he is, and this is who he is now, getting back to being a top 10 caliber pitching prospect. So if you can use the surface ERA being underwhelming, 3.64, to your advantage, this is a top 10 caliber pitching prospect. Maybe he's not top 10 in my rankings, because I think there's a lot of guys in this kind of cluster of my rankings, so it's hard to put all of them in the top 10, obviously. But yeah, Lauder is definitely someone I believe in moving forward. I think he's going to be a really good number 3 starter, high-end number 3 starter in the major leagues. And he won't have to be a frontline guy. They got Hunter Green. They got Nick Lodolo. He can settle in, could be right there, number 3 starter for them. I think that's where he's going to be. So, yeah, I'm definitely looking to invest in Rhett Lauder right now. How about you, Chris?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely in on Lauder. I agree with you. I don't think that we should expect, like, high-end starter profile, but I do think this is a very high floor type. It's good stuff. It's 2 fastballs, 4-seam, and sinker with kind of different movement patterns, which is obviously highly important. Throws the 4-seam a little bit harder. Yeah, it's average, but the sinker gets a lot of arm side run, like 17 to 20 inches pretty regularly. So yeah, that's been awesome to see him be able to utilize both in different counts, which I like to see. Slider's good. Changeup is obviously good. Like, you look at the changeup, it's okay. Like, Wake arms have really good changeups, and that's the case here. It's a really heavy arm side, much like the sinker, kind of mimics it in some way with that late dive to it. So that's obviously big. And the slider is able to miss bats too, with some good depth and a little bit of sweeping action to it. So yeah, I look at Rhett Lauder, and I think he's pretty much MLB ready at this point. I will say, I think this sinker is really important for Great American Ballpark to keep the ball on the ground. This is a park that you have to be able to keep the ball in the park. And I'm a little bit worried about Chase Burns. Lauder, throw the sinker down, get ground balls, be able to miss bats up with the 4-seam, miss bats with the slider, which is really good. And I think you'll be all right.
Yeah, I think, yeah. No, he just screams mid-rotation starter. If you looked at the definition of that in the dictionary, you'd have his picture sitting right there looking at you. So yeah, I think he kind of settles in maybe. I think he'd be a little bit better than Andrew Abbott, but I think him and Abbott will be like that 3-4 behind. Lodolo probably the 2, with Green being the 1. Yeah, that's pretty damn good. It doesn't have to be the frontline guy, so I think that definitely helps him as well. Now, last one here, our third down, is Dylan Lesko, who I feel has been a down. Like we said, Matthews has been up a few times this year. I think Lesko's been a down a few times this year. and 4 starts since being traded to Miami. So now he goes from Fort Wayne to Bowling Green, from the Midwest League to the South Atlantic League. He's 3 2/3, 4 innings, 1 2/3, 2 innings in those 4 starts. And just still the walk rate is an issue. Yeah, it's really funny to look at, too, because you look at in these 4 outings, 11 1/3 innings, 13 walks, 16 strikeouts, 6.35 ERA, only a 1.58 batting average against. Now, you see the stuff with Lesko at times. It's really good. I mean, we've seen that kind of flash here and there. But at the same time, since coming back from injury, his command has just terrible. It's been like 20-30 grade since coming back, and the walk rate has been very high all season. Look at over the last, the last 30 days, he's 1.58 batting average against, but a 3.96 OBP allowed, and only a 2.37 slug allowed. So it shows that, you know, he can miss bats. He can limit hard contact at times, but he's just having a really hard time throwing strikes. The strike rate in his last 4 outings, 51%. So it's almost as many balls as strikes, which is just not going to get it done. And I think we've been waiting, Chris, for he to get further and further away from surgery, get more comfortable again, for him to, all right, let's wait for him, the talent to shine through, and for him to flip the switch and turn it on, so to speak. But that just hasn't happened yet. And he's still only 20, and he'll be 21 in a couple of weeks. And he's still young, so it's not the time to be out. It's way too early for that. But he's getting more and more concerning as the season progresses here, Chris. So I don't know. How much hope do you have for Dylan Lesko turning it around at some point?
It's, as you mentioned, the strike throwing some of the worst in the minors. I think it's going to take a full off season of just work, you know, working on the mechanics. The stuff's good. Can't deny that the stuff here is really good. The changeup's good. The curveball's good. Four seam's good. So he checks boxes as far as stuff wise, but it doesn't really matter if you can't throw strikes or can't even remotely find the zone. And I think that's an issue. Like, the zone rates are pretty horrific. The fastball, like, he can't locate at all. It's all over the place. And that's a big concern for me. And you look, do I think the talent's there? Yeah, absolutely. But do I think that it's going to take a lot of work? I do, because he's not the same pitcher that he was pre-Tommy John. High school, like, this was a very solid command profile, like very advanced command for a prep arm. And I know prep arms are all risky, but to see the regression since surgery, since he had TJ, is very concerning for Lesko. Overall, yeah, to see him come over to Tampa and to see, yeah, it's more of the same. It's not great. I think you add in today, he just threw an inning. He allowed 3 earned runs and 3 walks. The numbers are inflated even worse. So, yeah, it's a little bit concerning for me, to say the least. The last time he had an outing with less than 3 walks, you have to go back to June. So that's pretty discouraging. And some of these outings are just an inning or two, and he's still walking 3 or 4 batters. Yeah, that's stuff's good. Command, control, very bad.
It's funny that you say that, because I was literally just looking at the same exact thing, but less than 2 walks. Last time he had a start with less than 2 walks was August 11th of last year. And like you mentioned, there's been a lot of these shorter outings in there, and he's still walking multiple guys in inning and 2/3 or whatever it may be. So funny that you went there, because I was looking at the exact same thing with his game logs. And yeah, it was on August 11th when he was with Lake Elsinore in the California League. I actually had a pretty good outing that day, 4 innings, shutout, 1 walk, 7 Ks. But then he ended his last 4 starts of last year, 3, 2, 3, and 6. And then, yeah, it's been 2+ and for the most part, 3+ or 4+ in every start so far this year. So I don't know. At this point, he's a deep league upside flyer. I don't think he's even in my top 200 anymore. If I had the guys, I think I have him ranked around like 225, 230, something like that. But yeah, we need to see some improvements here. He's far enough removed that we thought we'd start seeing him make those strides, but that just has not been the case. But hopefully he can. He's a very talented arm when he's on. We've seen very small glimpses of that. He had a couple starts earlier this year where you're like, all right, here's the Lesko that we're hoping for. So we'll see if he can get back to that in 2025. But that is going to wrap us up. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with you again on Thursday. But until then, everyone take care.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.